We have to create the right vibe, you know, the energy, and everybody at the organization has to feel so privileged to be here. It's no other way.
Thanks for listening to the Purely Arsenal podcast. Please follow us on Twitter at Purely Arsenal FP for all the latest Arsenal podcasts.
Welcome to another edition of a Purely Arsenal podcast. We're back and we're back to winning ways in a Prem. We've beaten Bournemouth 4-0 away from home. Clean sheet once again away from home. And I'm here with Neil Shah. How are you doing, Neil?
I'm good. I'm always close to thinking I'm going to change it back to Champions Elect from under my name now when, you know, come on some of these problems. I mean, we don't do it on this one, but yeah, we're back, baby. We're back.
That's it, mate. I'm a little disappointed last week. Well, I was so disappointed last week. We didn't even pod last week. I was very sort of downbeat about, you know, drawing at home to Tottenham. And that shows the level we're at, really. I mean, we always want to beat them, but I think it was more the performance and, you know, the loss of some players at halftime. And I think we felt like we had a lot more to offer than what we did in that game. But we got to talk it in context a little bit now. We talked offline a little bit about it. It's all about Arsenal on this podcast. We don't really go into other teams too much, but that was a great start to the weekend with those results. A lot of 3 o'clock games. We're not used to playing at 3 o'clock. And I don't think you could have imagined a better set of 3 o'clock fixtures than that going our way. You know, it was 3 points for us and City losing away to Wolves. United losing, you know, there's a few others in there that was Brighton lost 6-1. It was just some really crazy results. A week ago, people were talking about City just being, you know, inevitable and all that. Obviously, still a long way to go. And we've seen them bounce back from losses before. And we know what they are, but fantastic set of results, Neil.
Jack, unbelievable. I mean, I was really busy yesterday, so I didn't get to watch much. I couldn't watch it in any streams. So all I had was just before I was leaving to go out, the Sky updates and all the rest of it. So watching, and I just couldn't believe my eyes. I was thinking, hang on a minute. When have we had a situation where everything is going our way? But you always know, don't you, get that thing that it could turn reverse completely very quickly. All the teams that are losing that you want to lose suddenly start winning, and then you're winning, and also something goes wrong, get a VAR decision, go against you, or whatever it is. But it wasn't happening. It wasn't happening. And even when I think I saw City equalise, I thought, oh, here we go. And then the next minute, it's like, they're losing again. Hey, are we dreaming here? Do we need to pinch ourselves? Couldn't ask for a better weekend. Yeah, all right. I mean, to be fair, when I looked at the afterwards, the Tottenham Liverpool, and it was I think it was 1-1 for a while. I thought, okay, this is perfect. This is just perfect. I think even you, I did see a WhatsApp from you. Let's just blow the final whistle now. It's like
exactly
perfect end. But actually, having said that, you know, and God, I know I'm going to get absolutely destroyed for saying this, but the way it ended up isn't that bad. It meant that, you know, Liverpool started being showing something which I didn't expect, to be fair. I know it's early in the season, but I didn't think they'd be anywhere near this. And I thought, actually, it might not be such a bad thing that they've lost already. And I thought, it keeps us in the top three in a way. I mean, all right, I know if they had beaten Tottenham, I think we'd still be third. But we wouldn't be third on... I think they've scored. It's not even goal difference, is it? I think they've scored more goals.
It's not goal difference. You're right. The goal difference is exactly the same, I believe.
So, and I go, I know that's all little details and it's so early in the season that that's not really relevant. But from a mental point of view, I think that makes a difference. And I just think Tottenham are going to fall off. Come on, this is Spurs. They always do. And it's just perfect. I think it was, you couldn't ask for a better weekend, and it just sets up us nicely for the next Prem. I know we've got a Champions League game in between, but I think, and we were saying again offline, I don't think it's a better time to play City. It's really weird saying that when only a few days ago, everyone was referring to them as a machine and they're unstoppable. And it's, as you said earlier, inevitable and da, 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 da. I'm not so sure. They've lost two in a row. First time in a very long time that I can remember anyway. And, you know, they haven't got Rodri. I think it's a great time to face them next weekend. Come on, Jack. This is looking good.
Yeah, and the question mark there would have been the amount of players that we supposedly had out coming into this game. And I saw someone tweet, I'm sorry, I haven't got the app to credit them, saying, if you still believe what Mikel Arteta says in press conferences, then you still believe Santa Claus is real. And I was like, yeah, that's basically what the level we're at this point. Because he basically said we had 7 or 8 injuries, and about 6 of those players ended up starting the next day. So it was pretty... I knew a few of them would. I mean, you know, the likes of Saka, he's played 87 games or whatever it is in a row for a reason. It's unreal. We know he picks up knocks, but we also know that he gets kicked a lot and, doesn't always get the consequence for that, the opposition. But also, he recovers very quickly and he understands his body very well, I think, at this point. So some people would say, it'd be nice to see Arteta bring him off. But I think Arteta really understands him too at this point, and I think they have that good relationship where they kind of, he knows when it is too much. But again, he sort of came off or was struggling with a knock throughout this game almost, it seemed like. But then you saw Rice back in, Saliba in because he had a foot injury, Trossard was back in the squad, so a lot of your big hitters were there bar your Martinellis, and obviously Thomas Partey, who is supposedly not too far away as well. So in that sense, it looked really encouraging in the starting lineup, didn't it? We could have had a much changed starting lineup, and it looked really encouraging. It didn't look like Rice suffered any of the touchwood, any of the sort of reaction to the bad back stuff. He looked like he was moving very smoothly, played a very comfortable game. Didn't really get out of second gear for me, but he looked absolutely comfortable in everything he did. Neil, we were talking offline about having a comfortable game and how important it is not to necessarily be stressed as a collective, not just as a fan, for the total 90 minutes of absolutely every game. We remember back in the Invincible era, we had so many games that we used to win in the first 30 minutes and cruise through. And I think there's some value in that, Neil, in terms of like keeping players fit, and not having them to be stressed so long. You see City do it all the time too. They're resting whilst playing almost. And I think you saw a bit of that in this game. And I think it was really, really important. Bournemouth, obviously, they didn't offer a lot, but I thought we were absolutely professional. And I thought it was a really, really good performance in a game that you might have been a little bit worried about going into it, away from home, possibly mixed lineup, tough-ish game in midweek, having to play in the Carling Cup away from home as well. But very, very professional to get back to winning ways, wasn't it?
Perfect. I mean, I think, I was going to say something, and you said it, nailed it. You know when you're up against it, and the way Arsenal do it, we never do it easy, do we? It's in our DNA. We just don't do things easy. It's very rare. So when the Invincibles were doing that thing where they were motoring ahead and literally closing games off within the first 45 minutes, it was quite a rare thing for us, actually. It's been a long time since we've really done that to anyone. And I think when you're not in that situation and it's touch and go right till nowadays, what the 100th minute could be potentially, I think that causes tension. And of course, when you're tense, that can also lead to I'd say you're more susceptible to injuries. I really do. And that could be part of it. Everyone's quit thinking, why are we, all right, like you said earlier, a lot of the injuries now, we realise that, okay, they weren't so bad and the players were there. But we have suffered injuries. We have definitely suffered true injuries, if that makes sense. And it could be down to the fact that the players are constantly on, tenderhooks. Is that the right word? I'm not sure. But they're always stressed because of the way we play. Games could go either way within seconds, right till the end of or up to the final whistle. And I wonder if that has something to say in that. So the fact that that wasn't the case yesterday, especially leading to our next Champions League game, then of course City, I think we couldn't ask for more, Jack. We just couldn't. That there wasn't that real pressure on us. Like you said, didn't even get out of second or third gear most of the time. And although, you can't say that any game is easy, I would say that we were on top and it was very professional and we won it in a canter, you can say. You really can do. So like we said earlier, perfect day in all respects. Results going our way. We playing brilliantly in the sense that it wasn't tension or tense for the players as well as the fans for a change. And I just felt that it's a great statement to make as well. because a lot of us, including me, have felt that we haven't been playing free flowing and wonderful football, the wonderful football we were playing at the start of last season, apart from the game against PSV. It's one of the exceptions. Now we've shown it in an away game. And let's also remember, and this is the thing we need to sort out at home, Jack. That's our third straight away win without conceding a goal. And I think that's the first time that Arsenal have won three consecutive away games. It's only the fourth time we've done it in our history, weirdly enough, from the start of the season. And it's the first time we've done it without conceding a goal, Jack.
Yep.
Crazy. And we need to replicate that at home. That's absolutely the only thing.
So. Yeah, no, I completely agree with you. And it's our first time being unbeaten for the first seven since 2007, isn't it? Which is, you know, I mean, it's just interesting because a lot of people would say, you know, we've been criticised quite a lot in the start of the season. Even us on this podcast have, you know, certainly noticed that we've not been like we were at the start of last season. You know, we won't be as free-flowing. I'd even say in this game, you know, you can sense the attack isn't quite clicking. But the amount of injuries we've actually had, we've not really been able to field anywhere near our first 11. Even this game, you know, we didn't have Martinelli in the game. I still think Thomas Partey is part of our first 11, to be honest. So there's still a few players that are absent from our first 11, even at this point. And that this was maybe the closest we've got to it all season. So that was really, you know, that's something to take into account too. And we started so fast last season. And you could almost tell by January we were running out of steam, you know. And this is such a long season because of the fact we're in Europe, you know, in the Champions League again. Well, hopefully it is a long season in the sense of, you know, a lot of games. We go very far in things. But I just think we have to be a little bit more sensible. Maybe that's what we're being with a lot of these injuries that we're seeing and that we're getting. And like you said, I mean, five wins and two draws out of the first seven. You probably take that at the start of the season, don't you? Especially with the performances we've had that I still think we've largely been the best team in every game that we've played. Probably should have won every game we played, but we still know we're no way near the level that we can be at and that we've seen us at, in the recent past. So that's pretty encouraging. I think Neil, first goal, Saka wasn't even supposed to be playing, but playing. Five goals, three assists in eight, I think it is, this season in all comps. I woke up 50. I'm not going to lie. I woke up 15 minutes late for this game. I haven't done that in over a year. I woke up late for a game. And I was like, oh, God, I ran to the TV. As soon as I turned it on, within 20 seconds, that goal happened. And I was like, right, we're ready now. And I thought it was a replay. I was like, there's no way this just happened. I'm looking. I was like, no, it literally just happened. But it's a great ball from Odegaard. Jesus, I'm not sure he heads it to shoot. I think he's trying to get it back across goal. In the end, it does get it back across goal. And it's probably one of the few headers that I can remember Saka scoring, maybe. Is it one of two? Is it? Oh, wow. Perfect. Do you remember the other one? No, me neither. But on the score sheet again, that is inevitable. He's going to be involved in a goal, you know, per game, isn't he, Neil?
I don't know. I think I'm going to sound like a broken record because I think I said I don't know what to say last time. And I'm saying it again. You always speak. Oh, he can't sustain it. He's not going to. He's going to fall off or drop off at some point, and he is dropping off. He's not the same Saka he's, you know, that we saw last season. Consistently, just at the levels that he does, and then he surprises you again. It just keeps on doing it, doesn't he? Surprised that he's on the pitch and he's involved again. But let's not forget Odegaard. I think I always tend in every time I speak in these podcasts. I always tend to forget what an impact he is and his influence on all these games. It's just so unbelievable. I think he was involved in pretty much every goal, bar one yesterday. Involved in everything. And his the magnitude of this player, it should not be underestimated. It's incredible. It's the heart of everything now, I think. What an unbelievable player. You always liked him, Jack. And now I think your reasons for that are vindicated, unbelievably so. For me, he is the right person for captain. I'll say it now one more time. He's definitely the right player because he does it. He leads by example. And he has got that now, that player. It used to be Xhaka. Now he's got it in Rice. if we need to have a little bit more of the vocals, which Rice will certainly do that. I think we've got the perfect combination in those two. But yeah, Saka, all right, he was taken off, I don't know, 79th minute yesterday, I don't know when it was. And hopefully, again, he hobbles off. And most likely, everyone's like, oh my God, no, he's not injured. He'll be back. He'll be back for a lot. You just wait. The guy's made of, I don't know what he's, titanium. He's made of titanium, Jack.
He'll be back for Lons, yeah.
Oh, I'm sure he will. But what he just doesn't stop, does he? I don't know what to say, but I think you're right. I think when I saw the replay for one of the angles, it did look like Jesus was trying to pass it back.
Yeah.
So I'm not quite sure that was his intention of going for a shot. I'm not quite sure, but he was there at the right place at the right time. Saka is not only, he can do what he does from the right side as a winger, but he's almost like that fox in the box that we always have missed. He was right there. Because I remember after he laid the ball off, straight away you can see him going into the box. So his off the ball movement and positional play was perfect for that. I was like, wow, look at him. I wasn't looking at anyone else. I was just watching him. Because I was thinking, hang on a minute, he was just on the wing a minute ago. How was he there to head that ball in? So, and yeah, I think it's his second header since he's been since he's been playing. So I can't remember when the first one was. And James, the best thing, if he was here, he would have said straight away, yeah, you know what
he's like. He would have got it for sure.
He would have got it. But I was just wonderful. And it's a great start, again, in an away game, in an away fixture. And what better way to start? But yeah. Very happy.
Yeah, it's interesting. Just to touch on that before we go like a little bit more on the game. Arteta's quote. Did you read Arteta's quotes when they asked him the difference between away and home form? He said, sometimes we are able or we start to attack too fast. At home, we have many individual errors leading to goals that's cost us problems. We have to change it. We are not going to change our approach. But it's about the ability to change gears. We cannot play with those gears when we have or haven't got the ball. We have to manage it a bit better. I thought it was really interesting that he said, we attack too fast at home. Like, almost like we're too eager, you know. And sometimes when you're watching it at home, you're almost like thinking the opposite, aren't you, as a fan? But I think what he's thinking is, you know, when we try to push the game and force the game a little bit too much, because we're at home, the crowd's behind us, etc., it leads to us making, you know, those unnecessary passes or ones that maybe aren't really on, and that leads to those errors. It's odd though, isn't it? It is really odd when you see this sort of continuous pattern of, you know, individual errors at home, yet away from home, I don't want to say we're faultless, they can still happen. But this season, if you look at it, like we are pretty much, I mean, we're clean sheets everywhere, aren't we, away from home? And it's just a massive discrepancy, a huge difference, and something we really have to address at home. And I can't, you know, maybe we do. And he says we are an emotional team, we're a young team, but I'm not sure that's the full story. But it was very interesting when he said about changing gears. He said another thing in the quote about knowing when to change pace of the game, not always being at one pace, knowing when to slow and stop and stand. Declan Rice speaks about that a lot, about how Arteta just taught him to stand still sometimes and let the game come to him. Now, I saw that in an interview the other day and I thought, that's really interesting. Just stand still sometimes. He was like, stand still and you'll be in the right position oftentimes to be able to move. And I was like, that's really interesting. And you know what? That was from Raya as well. And I think we should touch on Raya at some point. I don't think it was a significant factor in this game. He did everything he needed to do, but he holds the ball for a lot longer than Ramsdale does, I've noticed. He will just put his foot on the ball and wait for players to come to him. Whereas, you know, when you see Ramsdale do it, sometimes he's quite eager to make that pass, whether it's long or short. Whereas I noticed with Raya, he's very willing to just keep the ball at his feet for 5-10 seconds extra, which is interesting. It's still early days for Raya. I'm still trying to figure out the differences, but we'll get to that because it is an interesting discussion. But like you said on Saka, he's back. He's back in the team. I think he'll be there against Lons. Hopefully, I still think the key with him is to try to get him off earlier in games rather than find someone to start him. I'm not sure we have that player that is clear to come in for him and stay to that level for like multiple weeks at a time. But we still haven't really signed that player. But I think to be able to get a player to trust in a Vieira or Nelson or a Smith Rowe to be able to take some of those minutes off of him from the subs bench could be really critical, I think, for his longevity. But yeah, brilliant from Odegaard again, like you said. And then Odegaard, the second goal, really interesting. It's good movement from Eddie, in fairness. It's a really silly challenge from Bournemouth, but Eddie's very, you know, he's got good pace. I again was a little bit frank. I can never knock Eddie's work rate. He always works 100%, always gives everything. Just sometimes I feel like his, you know, cutting edge or his sort of ability to be sort of technically assured is not quite there. But here, gets his foot to the ball first, definite penalty. Now, what was your thoughts on the penalty exchanges in this game? Because obviously we had two, and we can talk about both if you like, but what are your thoughts on sort of the players handling that? This time, the first one, Saka gave it to Odegaard. We've seen him do that already this season. And then we can touch on the third one a little bit. But I just wonder, it doesn't seem to be any format to it. It seems like just what they feel on the day. And it doesn't seem to be coming from the manager. Would you agree with that?
100%. He's admitted it already. I just read some of his comments and he said this. He said it's beautiful. He actually described it as beautiful. He's so happy that the players have that leadership amongst themselves to make those decisions and to act on them and to execute them. And he said it's not coming. He's basically said, he didn't say it like that, but he said it's not coming from me, nothing to do with me. And he said, I'm so happy. He's basically elated by it. And I think it's great. I think it throws off the opposition because they're all expecting Saka to take it. And we know that Odegaard is almost flawless with his execution penalties. Again, another one, well taken. I just so cool, isn't he? He really is. I feel very confident when I see Odegaard taking a penalty. I really do. Having said that, we haven't been bad in recent times with penalties. None of our players have. You know, it's something we used to struggle with, if you remember, Jack. And we're thinking, practice penalty, Wenger, practice penalties. But I haven't really had much to complain about in recent years with us and penalties. So, of course, there's going to be the odd misses here and there. But I was just fueled with confidence when I found out that he was the one taking it. And then the same with the... And for me, it was more of a heartfelt thing to give it. If we can just go into the third for Kai, because he's really needed that. We've all known. I think there's not a fan in amongst the Arsenal fan base that would disagree that he really needed that. And, you know, just on that, you know, I was, again, wasn't able to watch the game as such, but listening to it all and watching the visuals on the text, there was that heartfelt or that moment where you think, please don't miss this, Kai, because if you miss this, you're going to even get more haters on your back big time. And you cannot miss a spell. So the pressure the boy must have been under is unbelievable. What was that? He had gone 20, 21 games club for club, not scoring.
That was including Chelsea, obviously, right?
Including Chelsea, of course, but unbelievable pressure. Actually took it quite well, I have to say. And yeah. Did you see how all the players just went and mobbed him?
Yeah.
So what Arteta said about that was how he just said it was just beautiful to see that. And he said it warmed. He said he warmed my heart that the players, even within the players, they've got each other's backs. Basically, he was saying that, you know, they don't like the fact of the external issues. So he said it's only external issues with Kai. He goes, there's nothing internal. It's all external. And it just warmed his heart to see how the other players, his fellow peers, have got his back with that. It was magnificent. Look, I'm not going to sit here and start going against what I've said earlier. That I don't think Kai is quite ready yet. I really don't. But I I'll stick with that. But I don't like the abuse that any player gets from external sources. I don't like it. We've always said that on this board. We, you know, you're right. We will see it as we say. Sorry, say it as we see it. I'm not going to kind of deny that. Always. We could be going mental about Saka for months and months. And if he has a poor game or a couple of poor moments, we will talk about it.
Yeah.
It's the way it is. But I'm not going to sit here and throw abuse at players or anything like that. And I think him getting this goal, albeit a penalty, I think it could change things for him.
Do you really?
Well, no, I'm not saying it's going to be like waving a magic wand, but it's certainly going to instill something in him, which is positive, Jack. And we might see some nicer stuff going forward from him. I still believe, no matter what happens, I think it was a match of the day. I think it was Shearer saying, oh, he's not going to be a regular starter or anything. I'm not so sure. You know, Arteta has shown that he's been
Arteta
playing
intends him to be,
And I think he is going to be, he's got him in his plans. Yeah. And I think getting that goal is going to change things for him a little bit from in a positive way, I think, Jack. So let's see what happens. But yeah, just going back again, sorry, I think I went too forward there, but I thought it was it an exchange between Zinchenko and Eddie that led to Eddie being
I believe so. Well, for the third or for the second?
Second.
All I remember is Eddie running through now for top man.
Yeah.
We watched it as I speak, but it may well have been. Look, Eddie wasn't really going anywhere. And then, Aaron just dives in on him, but Eddie does fantastic to get
it's
to get.
It's definitely a penalty for me. 100%.
Oh yeah, without doubt. I don't know what the shock was from their side,
but the Odegaard one. Oh my God, that was a terrible challenge on him.
Was it on Odegaard for Havertz or was it on Zinchenko?
For the
third.
No, it was Odegaard got challenged, didn't he? It was Odegaard.
I'm rewatching it right now. I thought it was Zinchenko that went down, but you may well be right.
I thought it was Odegaard. Oh, maybe I'm wrong now.
I'll come back to it. You may be able to be right. I'm forwarding to the third penalty, but
I'm sure it was Odegaard.
There were two terrible challenges. That's all I remember.
Yeah, that's
very naive
challenges. Yeah, basically, I'm saying there's no controversies there. There's no debate. They were both penalties for me.
Yeah. There was some lovely sort of interchange in the second half before that third goal as well. Like Odegaard, little flicks through to Saka, who he couldn't do much more. And Zinchenko actually was really wanting to get on the score sheet. I thought he had a great effort from the first half.
Did he have
absolutely right. It was Odegaard. Sorry. He may have done it. He had a shot that was blocked from the 6-yard box. He was everywhere. And I looked up. I mean, he had the most touches in the game, but Zinchenko usually has the most touches in the game.
He does.
But he just looked like he was very comfortable, just roaming in this game. He wasn't concerned about anything behind him, put it that way. He's always pretty comfortable. But yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, I don't know why I thought it was Zinchenko, but it's a dreadful challenge on Odegaard. He just dived in. I mean, diving in the box anyway, but they're diving in nowhere near the ball. So they really gifted us one or two there, to be honest. But beyond that, we created enough chances. I still think the volume of chances we create could be a bit higher. It's because... You know, this was it was basically a 4-0 game, but you get quite a lot of expected goals off two penalties. So without those, it was like a 2-0 game, and you get a sense that you could probably create a little bit more, though we did create a lot of good chances late on in the game, to be fair. But I agree with you, just to touch on the Havertz thing. I've been critical of Havertz quite a lot, not of him as a person or anything like that, just from a footballing standpoint. You know, I'll never go down that route. I don't know why anyone would, but he seems like a very sort of good, humble guy, but a very sort of guy that needs his self-esteem built up a little bit as well, and his self-confidence built up. Maybe he's been through it a little bit in recent times in England, but he's clearly feeling the support from the club and the players. So hopefully, like you said, it does him the world of good. Just the one thing I would say on him, if I keep thinking about what I thought initially when Havertz come in, is I thought initially we were buying him as an alternative number nine. Because he played at number nine for 2 years for Germany. And I know Chelsea are an absolute shambles, but he played at number nine under like four different managers at Chelsea. So it wasn't like one or two managers played him. They all thought he was playing, you know, that was where they wanted to play him. And I think Mikel Arteta is better than all those managers put together. So, you know, I trust in him. But at the same time, I do watch him sometimes and think probably his best performance. I didn't think he was great in this game. I thought he was on the fringes again, to be honest. He had the least touches out of than Eddie and Keita, who notoriously doesn't have a lot of touches of the ball. It's not totally based on that. But I do think that at nine, like in the Community Shield, for example, that was when he played at nine. He offers something just a little bit different. He's very different profile wise to Jesus and Eddie, not just because of his height, just because of like what he actually offers. His back to goal, I think he's very good with his back to goal. He's not someone that necessarily sort of like runs the channels too much, but he offers something a little bit different, I think, on the ball and off the ball, and takes up a little bit of different spaces, offers something different to, you know, difficulties towards the centre backs. I think we still might see him there a little bit, but clearly Mikel Arteta intends for him to sort of try to you know, producing that left eight role. And like you said, I don't think he's there yet. And my hope is I hope we don't play him so much that it becomes costly to him or us as a team. You know, I think it may have done a little bit so far this season. And I just think if he needs time, give him time, you know, and play him, but don't play him, you know, don't overplay him and don't make him a must start in the team or anything like that, because he clearly, that left eight role isn't quite functioning to the level it was with Xhaka there last season, you know, who was playing very well and is continuing to play well at Leverkusen. So, but brilliant. I love his song. I think his song's hilarious. Don't know if you've heard it in the crowd, but I'm trying to work out which one I love more, that or the Odegaard song at the moment. They're both.
James put on the chat. Is that the one?
The Odegaard one is to the darts song.
Yes, right.
You know, the darts tune, which is, it's just a great tune to hear anyway. You know, yes. I'm not a big fan of darts, but that, everyone knows the tune. And yes. The Kai Havertz one is to the Shakira Waka Waka World Cup.
That's right. That's great. But, I've heard it.
60 million down the drain. Kai Havertz scores again, which is very tongue in cheek, very fun. But it's when you hear the whole crowd singing it after he scores, it's like, yeah, that's pretty good to hear, you know. And the fan base is amazing, and they look like they're having a great time yesterday away game. I would have loved to have been there.
Unbelievable.
It looks really, really fun, didn't it? It really did. And at 3-0, I mean, I was pretty comfortable at 2-0, but at 3-0, I think Arteta felt comfortable. We could start to make changes. There's a few other players that I do want to talk about, but I think we probably, because we haven't spoke about him and he played in midweek, we probably should talk about Smith Rowe a little bit. And what were your thoughts? Because he came on, he looked really eager to impress. He had two big chances, probably should take the first one, but it is a good save from the keeper. But I think we might be just starting to see some little shoots from Green, from Smith Rowe. Thought he looked pretty good against Brentford in the first half, then tap, you know, first start in 499 days. Obviously, he tired off a little bit. But I think from the left, he really offers us something different in terms of his driving, his running into the box, the goal threat that I don't think really Havertz or Vieira have. I just wondered do you think he's getting any closer to maybe getting in the mind of Arteta for one or two games that might be coming up that aren't Carling Cup games, if you like?
Jack, if he isn't, he should be. Yeah. I'm always wax lyrical about the guy, and being wax lyrical about a player we don't even see, that's ridiculous, because I shouldn't be, but I am. I know what I've seen in the past of him, and I'll always stand by it. I'm a huge advocate of this player. I really do believe in him. I believe that when he gets a consistent run, you're going to see some great stuff from the guy, as long as he stays injury free. I really do. And yes, he should definitely be in Arteta's mind for all competitions, not just the Carling Cups, not just the FA Cups when we start that competition off. He just adds another different type of threat. You see, we've got, you've always talked about these drop-offs with other alternatives. And yes, we did have those. But I think now it's not so much about drop-offs. It's about a player in a similar position, but they offer something slightly different. And we need that. We do need that, because there's always been this criticism of us becoming too predictable, as we may have done last season. You know, like you said, we started off unbelievably quickly, and then we kind of not only just burnt ourselves out a little bit too early, but maybe became a little bit predictable as well in our play. And that what these players do, these alternative options do, is slightly changes it up there. And you're right, he is someone that runs down the channels. And he can be a huge menace to the defence. He has got creativity, he's got a good pass, and he's got a good eye. And he's always had that connection with Saka. They always talked about it when they were youngsters, that they knew their game inside out between each other, the telepathy between the two players. And you can't discount that, Jack. You know, Saka is our player, he's our star man. And if he can have someone like Emma Smith-Rowe as his foil, I don't know how they may combine with each other again, but it's possible. You can't discount it. So I want to see more of him. I personally do. And I think you'll see, if he's given the chance, the minutes on the pitch, it's only going to benefit him and benefit us. So for me, 100% yes, definitely. And he was close, wasn't he, with the other goal as well, which one went wide, didn't it? That was a nice move, by the way.
Yeah, well, it was a very nice move, and I know what you mean. He opened up his body.
Yeah,
he may have opened it up too much, but it did get touched from the keeper, so you can't really tell.
Yeah,
the other one was a nice shot from the edge of the area, but you could tell he just kind of like each kind of looked to the sky after that, because you can tell he's not getting many minutes in the big games, and he's desperate to make an impact like Nelson did last season.
Yes,
and I think we forget that his best performances under Arteta truly were from the bench. They were from the bench. In his best season under Arteta, where he got double.
You're right.
Half of that season, he was coming off the bench and scoring. We were like, bring Smith Rowe on. He'll win the game. And do you remember we were in that mode of get him on, he'll score. And he kept doing it. He would come on for Martinelli, and he obviously was playing more left wing. But does feel like, he played in the 10 against Brentford, which was interesting. And they played Havertz at left 8 again. So obviously, Mikel Arteta's trying to make Havertz at the 8, you know, get him as many minutes there as possible. But I do think Smith Rowe is sort of tailor-made for that left. That's his closest area that he's going to get to the team, because no one's taking Odegaard's spot. And I personally still think if Odegaard was injured or had to come out for a game, it would be Vieira personally, just because I feel like creativity-wise, on the ball, left-footed, I feel like he's just more a natural replacement. So his role, or in his head, I hope he's thinking, I'm trying to get this left-eight role. And I just wonder if we can... I'd like to see him in midweek against Lonza. I wouldn't be against starting him either in midweek. I don't think that will happen, but it'd be very encouraging, even if we sort of went at the 60th minute, Smith Rowe's on. I think that would be pretty encouraging for him to see that maybe Mikel Arteta's starting to regain the trust. I think his lack of trust in him is largely down to his body, really, and believing that he can cope with the vigours of sort of three game a week stuff, because he has been out for a long, long time with a lot of different injuries, hasn't he? And you see what Mikel Arteta's like with that, with the likes of Kieran Tierney and stuff like that. He sometimes just casts them aside, doesn't he? So can he earn back the belief of the manager? You know, he talks well about him, Mikel Arteta, but actually speak a little bit louder, don't they, really? But then he made wholesale changes, which was nice. We got a few players off the pitch. I think Rice came off pretty early. Don't believe Odegaard did, because I'm almost certain he created his first goal. Yeah. But we were still able to get a football. But before that, I think we had a couple of chances. Jesus had a couple of chances.
And
he looked frustrated that he didn't score. But he's fantastic, Gabriel Jesus. And playing him from left again, it'd be nice to get Gabriel Jesus back into the centre if Trossard maybe comes back in midweek. But Ben White got on the score sheet for the final one, Neil, and it was nice to see Odegaard. It's kind of shocking sometimes to see that was his first assist, I believe, this season in the Premier League. With the amount of creation that Odegaard provides, I always feel like he kind of, you know, his stats don't really back it up in terms of assists. But he is very, very creative, and it was a simple ball in. It was terrible marking for Bournemouth, but again, nice to get the fourth, and suddenly our goal difference looks a lot prettier, doesn't it? Because we've not really scored much this season.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's it. It was because it just helps our GD, doesn't it? It really does. And sometimes that's important. Sometimes it does play a role. So I think, and it's just nice to get goals. It's just nice. It's because it helps with the confidence. I really do believe it. And whoever's scoring, it makes them feel better. And I suppose, at the end of the day, you're all contributing. Whatever role you've got on the pitch, you're all contributing. And I think that's where Ramsdale, for me, when you talk about Ramsdale Rea, I think Ramsdale's so eager. He's got that personality, isn't he? He's got that thing about him. He just wants to be involved. And maybe that's why he does what he does. And he's a bit more quicker, and he wants to get the movement going, because he feels like he has to be part of everything. I think that's why I still seem to feel that he's higher up the pitch than other goalkeepers, because he just wants to be involved, even as a spectator, when he's seeing everything happening on the other end. I think that's what it is. But it's nice that White got on the score sheet. I think he's been an unsung hero, to be fair. I think he's been very consistent this season, Jack. And I think it not much is said about him, is it? We talk about highlight Gabriel, Saliba, Timber, obviously, who unfortunately has got injured. And we look at Tomiyasu and speak about Zinchenko. But not much is said about White and what he does. And I think he's a fantastic player. He's a fantastic. And to see him get on the score sheet, yeah, all right. I mean, the defence was poor, but he just rose above everyone, didn't need to score that. And I'm so pleased for Odegaard. I didn't realise that that's Odegaard's first assist. I didn't know that.
I'm checking his stats right now. I'm almost certain it is.
When you were saying it, I was like, what?
Yeah.
Wow, that's ridiculous.
It's ridiculous in terms of his creativity. Like yes. For example, the first goal, it's his ball to Jesus, but he's always sort of that guy before. He's always that pre-assist guy.
Exactly. He's just involved.
Yeah, constantly.
So that's quite hard to believe. So it's nice for him to get an assist on the board. And, of course, I think it's great for Wyatt to score. I think it's nice for any time a defender scores. It's just that they get involved. It's just that involvement factor. Yes, it's academic. We'd already won the game, but it helps the goal difference. It's nice for the player, nice for the defender, and it's just a nice way to close the game off and get ready for the next one. So, yeah, great stuff for me. Brilliant.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Odegaard, for me, was man of the match. I mean, yes. I largely think he is in most of our games, to be honest. Obviously, he had a disappointing one against Spurs last week and people started questioning. I saw a lot of people saying, oh, you know, big, I think they've forgotten 3-4 games before that against Tottenham where he was basically man of the match. But I think he's oftentimes when we're good, he's our man of the match. And it wasn't different again. You know, he scored one, created one, basically created another as well. And he's just fantastic. He's just an unbelievable player. Like you said, just really, really top player, top captain. I think we're really, really lucky.
Very lucky to have him.
Yeah. I mean, him and Rice have
29 million. Am I right? 29. Yeah, I still can't believe that. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, we're going to make Real Madrid regret that one. We're going to make them regret it if they're not already. I mean, they're obviously doing good things, but I'm sure they'll be regretting that to a certain degree. And if not, they'll be regretting it by the time they've seen him throughout the rest of this Champions League, because he's just a fantastic football player, you know. You don't sign a player at 16 like that just to let him go later on for money like that. So they made an error there and we benefited from it, in my opinion. So, but he's just absolutely brilliant. I've seen Liverpool fans talking to a lot to me this season about Szoboszlai and Saturday, and he looks very good, and they're talking and comparing. I was like, sure, you compare after 6 games, but let's see Odegaard's, he's been doing it very, very well for about 18 months for us, and long may it continue. And I think he's still got levels to go, to be honest. I think he's, you know, you're seeing him in front of goal look so much more confident from the edge of the box. I think in terms of that assist area, I just can't see why that number won't go skyrocketing at some point. I think it's deviating from where it should be, really. So just really just to touch on, just briefly before we touch on Lonzo and City, and I'll let you go. Tomiyasu was probably the standout player in midweek for me. I thought he was really good. And obviously came on again in this game, but he played in centre-back. It was the first game he'd ever started at centre-back for Arsenal. And I just wondered if you thought, because that game was all really about seeing if anyone popped themselves up the pecking order and things like that. And I just was watching that thinking, and Arteta just glowing about him at the end and saying how fantastic Tomiyasu is for the squad. And I'm starting to think that if anyone drops out, he's a bit like the Trossard of the back line, whereas if anyone drops out of the back line, no matter where it is, starting to think it may well be Tomiyasu that pops into it, right back, left back, centre back. It is pretty important to have a player like that, and that's pretty unique as well, isn't it?
So I think you've again off air when I say offline on WhatsApps. I think I'm sure it was you that said, all right, the Timber injuries hurt us big time, but if we've got anyone close to what Timber was there to do, it's now Tomiyasu. And I think that's it. I think that just sums it up nicely. I for me, that's the best. The cameos he's made recently are some of the best I've seen since when he first started with us, for sure. Because when he first came on, I thought it was great. Yeah, it might have been albeit in a different position, but I think he's great, and he's got that versatility about him. He's obviously got the strength, he's got the height. Sometimes he covers for Zinchenko. He doesn't do what Zinchenko does, but what he does do defensively, I think he's great. I don't think he's done much wrong. I think he was quite flawless, wasn't he, when he came on in the last game, or what he did. I don't think he's made many errors.
No, he looks fit as well.
Exactly that. Touch I think wood. He just looks. He looks fit. He's ready to go. And yeah, if there is any call for him to play, if God forbid something happens detrimentally for us, whether it be an injury or suspension, I think he's the man. And you know, of course, don't forget we've got Kibior, which I think he had a good game.
He did, from left back, made some fantastic blocks in the second half.
Jack, I think he's going to become a great player. Yeah, I really do. And if we've got him, and then hopefully, touch wood, there's no damning effects from Timber's injury, you know, in a few months' time. My goodness me, what a defensive lineup we've got, hopefully, for a few years.
Yeah.
Because it'd be nice for them to establish themselves at the same club, knowing each other's game inside out. We've got options there. If they stay together, I think we've got a good lineup for a few years. The only one that I'd say out of that group that may fall away is Gabriel, because he's always heavily linked, isn't he, to leaving. I hope not.
He's fantastic as well, isn't he?
Yeah, he was, and he has been. But I think it bodes well for the future. But the Timber loss may not be so may not be so hurtful after all, after knowing that actually
we've got to keep him fit, haven't we? Hard thing with Tommy Asu. He's been a rotten luck with injuries, and
I agree. And I don't know if I can't see it, but I won't be surprised if we see him feature a lot against Lons. Honestly.
Well, I tell you what, now you bring it up, because I do have some talking points on the City. I mean, the lineup for Lons is interesting, because he's obviously going to take it seriously, but I think he might rotate sort of three players or something like that. And I, like you said, I think Tomiyasu could come in. But with City, I do wonder if the thing I've been thinking ever since the Community Shield is, even though Zinchenko didn't play in the Community Shield, Timber played in the Community Shield. And that was probably our best, even though I know we scored in the last second and it was kind of like a, you know, we almost lost it, but we won it on penalties kind of thing. But if you look at the overall game, we limited them to quite few chances. And I think if Timber was fit now, Timber would start that game at left back, to be honest. And I wonder, from Zinchenko's point of view, if he's too emotionally invested in a game like this. And I remember watching that and thinking, I remember like talking offline to you and to James and going, that is almost a perfect lineup against Man City, because we took out some of the emotion from the team, from the collective. Jesus also wasn't involved in that game. I've never really pinned that too much on Jesus, but every time I watch Zinchenko against Man City in the build-up, they collectively do this. They get three or four of their players around him during the warm-up, Man City, and they almost collectively bully him, and they know all they're doing is just riling him up, and Zinchenko falls for it like bait every time. And from a footballing standpoint, I think of the fact that this game's at home probably means Zinchenko will start, but I just wonder if he's in the back of his mind, Mikel Arteta, thinking, maybe I take it out of the game and put Tomiyasu there. And I'll tell you what, if Tomiyasu doesn't start in midweek, it would be a real hint at that, because you'd be like, well, he's, you know, because he probably should start in midweek, so why wouldn't he be? So it would be a real hint at that. But I just wonder, the fact the game's at home probably tips it towards Zinchenko. But if it was away, I'd be almost certain that he would take Zinchenko out of this game to draw some of the emotion away from it, because I do think some of those players are just a little bit too, and Zinchenko is the worst for it, and I think they know how to get under his skin before the game's even started. They it's a tactic from them. They obviously do it. They put the same three or four morons around him, like Walker and Grealish, and they just do the collective thing of just banter him. They pick him up, they do little things with him, you know, just sort of things you see in secondary school, you know, that kind of stuff. And I'm just like, get him away from it, and, you know, bring him on if you have to, but maybe just get him away from it, you know, and put 11 people that are just going to look at them like another team. But I also think the other markup, and I can't remember who started in that game, I don't think this necessarily was true, but they generally play Kyle Walker against us at right back, who is, I think, the fastest player in the league. And I always think Martinelli is a bad matchup for Kyle Walker, because Martinelli is basically all one pace, extremely fast, but Kyle Walker knows exactly how to deal with speed. So play Trossard out there, because Trossard is the exact opposite of what Martinelli does. He cuts inside, plays with the ball a little bit more, wants to always play in the inside half space, you know, always wants to, just very different. But Kyle Walker, he's gone up against the likes of Vinicius Jr. and would put him in the back pocket over two legs. Like, he knows how to handle, you know, anyone with pace and trickery. But someone that just sort of almost moves away from him, I would be quite interested to see if we do something like that as well. So, I mean, what's your thoughts on the next two games? Massive two games. Can't look, I mean, I'm talking about City because it's so big, but can't look as a collective beyond the Lons game. I presume we're travelling today or Monday latest to Lons. I know it's not a long trip or anything like that, which is which is nice. But they have an incredible atmosphere, apparently, Lance, at their stadium. I know they've not started that well in the league. They have an incredible atmosphere in their home games. Away games in the Champions League, as we know from history, there isn't really easy away games in the Champions League. So how much do you see him rotating for that one?
Wow, great guest question. I don't think he's going to change the goalkeeper. It's obvious now. Soraya's staying where he is. I think you have made a really interesting and good point with the Zinchenko situation. So whilst Tommy is a great choice or a great rotational option, if he's thinking along those lines, he's not going to change it. He's going to keep Zinchenko there for Lens. So I'd say no for that. I'd say the defence will probably stay as it is, actually. Yeah. Keep it as it is. Now, just as I'm talking, I can't see him doing much, to be honest. Maybe one or two for Lens.
Yeah, probably two, yeah. Jorginho, someone like that, maybe. Maybe.
Oh, Jorginho was the one in midfield I was going to suggest because he's a Champions League kind of player. I think that's one of the reasons why we've kept him in at the club. Because of experience there. I don't think, apart from him, potentially, I mean, yeah, we could see Tomiyasu, but I don't know if we will.
Yeah, maybe a Trossard because he didn't start.
I think, yeah, maybe a Trossard. But then again, as again you mentioned, for the same way you talked about Zinchenko not starting in for City or keeping away for City, but using Trossard against City because of the Walker situation, would he start him against Lens as well? I would have said definitely until you said that. So now I'm not sure. I think there's not going to be many changes for Lens. I think it's maybe one or two max, honestly. Yeah. I don't know where. Obviously, Saka's going to play. We know that.
Yeah, Saka will play.
Odegaard's going to play. Yeah. I think Jorginho may be one of them. Definitely Jorginho. And maybe Tomiyasu come in. But apart from that, I can't see anything else. And Trossard, possibly. Martinelli, I don't know where he is with his fitness. I don't
very know. Vague. I don't think he'll be back for City, to be perfectly honest, because he's been vague on it, but you know, it would be odd to just throw him back into a game, wouldn't it? Especially when you've got the option of Trossard. If Trossard wasn't available, maybe we do, but it looks like Trossard is available because he was part of the squad. He didn't come on, looks like he's fit. Maybe we're thinking Tuesday or maybe we're thinking City because he's not been out for more than sort of a week, 10 days, I don't think so. And he was fantastic when he did come out, wasn't he? So, the Martinelli's the one that I don't... I know there's been some rumours about Thomas Partey being back before the break, but I can't see him. He wouldn't play him anyway, would he? Because it's City at home. It's not like it's a game you can ease a player in that's been out for 6 weeks. So he's going to be after. And plus, if you do play him in that, he goes on the international break. And that's the last thing Mikel Arteta will want. So we won't...
Yeah, he's not coming back till after the international duty.
No, 100%.
So the only other things with Lens is potentially we might see... We were talking about him just earlier. Emil Smith Rowe may feature. I'm not saying he will start, but he may feature in that game. Possibly Nelson. Who knows? I don't know. Look, end of the day, our away form has been fantastic. Let's hope it continues with Lens. We're not conceding away, so let's see what happens. If we're somehow, albeit in a very oppressive stadium, kind of having the same kind of game that we did against Bournemouth, then I think we'll see some rotational substitutions as well, just to see how they get on, because it's Champions League after all. But starting wise, I can't see more than two. I just can't. I'll be shot.
Yeah,
he's just going to go with the winning. Well, what we've got at the moment, they've come in for a great win as we have done. Can't see him changing much, especially if he's got plans like you highlighted for City. So I think it's great. It's great options, isn't it? Really,
he's going to do something different for City. He's going to do something different. I might not have got what it is right, but I don't think he'll just go into it the same. He'll do something different. I don't know whether it'll be, you know, the Zinchenko removal for Tomiyasu, or it'll be an inclusion of Jorginho with Rice or a Havertz up in the nine or something. I just get the feeling he's going to do something different. But we can talk about that, after the Lens game is very important, because you win the Lens game and then you go into a double header, I believe, against Sevilla, and knowing that winning one of those almost gets you there, in terms of, and that's massive to, to know that maybe with two games to go or something like that, I know we're getting a little bit ahead of ourselves, but to know that for, would be huge in terms of our ability to truly rotate and things like that. So, you know, Wenger used to always try to do that, didn't he? He always tried to get through the group as early as possible. So, you know, there was multiple Champions League games where we used to rotate in the last game.
Absolutely, hugely important. I think also it would be nice if we can guarantee not only qualifying, but ending top with at least a game to spare. So then all these other, all we can stretch our squad out completely and give them some experience in arguably the best club competition in the world, or cup competition in the world. I really believe that we have a great opportunity for some of the academy lads that are really causing the stir to feature, because it'll be, in a way, I'm saying this with the greatest respect, if we're already qualified and we're top, what's the point, you know, risking some of the senior players and, you know, get the academy boys out and give them a chance. And some of the bench players, if you like, to give them a full 90 if they're able and see if they can sustain it fitness-wise. I think it's massively important. So we've got to win. We've got to get the points early in this competition. To, again, not only for that reason, but also what you touched on at the beginning of the podcast about the stress, being able to not being stressed in this competition as well. So I think it's hugely important, and we've got a great opportunity to do so. Our waveform's been magnificent. So why not?
Yep. So let's see how we are for the first game on the road in the Champions League. We play Tuesday. City play Wednesday away against Leipzig. I know we touched on it pre-pop, but like I said, it was incredible to see that they lost to Wolves, who haven't been terrific really this season. So that was hugely surprising. You just never know, do you? So it's been a long time since we've beaten Manchester City. I don't know the year, but it's been a long time since we've beaten them. So that we're due one. We are due one, but we've got to turn up. So what's your predictions for Lons away on Tuesday, and in terms of score and first scorer, and then Man City, which I believe is Sunday?
I'm going to go 2-0 Lons. I think we'll keep another clean sheet. 2-0.
Like that.
And of course, I want to be different. No, we're not going to be different. A little bit. Rice.
Yeah. You think he played, is he would start against Leo? Well, he looked good today, didn't he?
He looked all right to me. I think he'll start. Rice, I don't care who scores, to be honest, Jack, but let's go for Rice. 2-0 City. I think it was when we started, when I first did my first pod with you, was the last time we beat them in the league, wasn't it?
Was it really?
Is it? I don't know. Maybe I
might be. What was the score in that
Dante
one?
Dante and Coughlan.
Yes, we did do a pod on that one. I'm almost certain we did. That was a terrific. That was at City, wasn't it? Yeah.
Is that the last time we beat them at City in the Prem?
Yeah, City. We might have beaten them at home since then. You know, might be right though. I mean, I don't Jesus recall Christ. The year. It's been a few years.
It is damning, isn't it?
It's been a long time. Yeah.
Do you know what? Because of how results panned out yesterday, or for you today. I would actually take a draw, but I don't do draw predictions, sorry. So I'm going to obviously go for a win. 2-1, right? And for City, Odegaard.
Yeah, all right. Well, I'll go. Yeah. I like that. I'll take those. I'll go 2-1. I'll go 3-1 against Lons. 3-1 against Lons. Hopefully, and I'll go. You said Rice, didn't you?
Yeah.
I'll go Trossard for that one. I'll go Trossard, and then against City, what did you say? I'll go 3-2. 3-2 Arsenal. 3-2 Arsenal, and I'll go Jesus first score for that one, which would be
us scoring three against City. I'll take that all day long.
Well, mate, you never know. We've not been the most free-flowing. The one thing I would say for us, I think, what was it being, 7 games? We've conceded 6. I know we didn't concede a lot last season, but in terms of the amount of chances we're conceding, I do feel that area we have improved in. So I don't want to just say, you know, our attacking free-flowing ability is limited. And if you're honest, Neil, what cost us the season, the league title last season, was the amount of goals we conceded.
Yes,
it wasn't the amount of goals that we scored. Now, I know we're a little bit off in terms of that, but in terms of our creation, we scored 88 last season. So all this talk about needing a striker, which I think is in the future. There's a lot of goals in this team if we make it click. But the conceding of goals, especially when we lost one or two defensive players, was I think we were way above 40. And title winners don't win. You don't win titles with conceding that many goals. You don't win titles with conceding the amount of chances we conceded to. And I actually think we've conceded 6 in 7, I think. But I actually think a lot of the goals we've conceded this season in the Premier League have been a little bit, well, very much individual errors, like a bit unlucky. We've been punished fully for individual errors, and I think we've conceded quite few chances actually on the goal. I think the data said before this game that we were just below City in terms of the amount of chances we conceded, second in the league, and City obviously just conceded 2, so it may be a little bit closer than we think now. So I think that is actually very encouraging, but again, you have to have the balance with going forward. But I think that is quite encouraging. And on the rare Ramsdale stuff, I thought Ramsdale was very good in midweek, but saves. It was just the sort of game for him. But there was nothing about it that made me think he was going to do anything in terms of changing it. And I've never really believed the rotational thing. I don't think you have either. And I like Ramsdale a lot, but I've warmed a lot to Raya too, you know. And I think his distribution, he had a little bit of an iffy one, didn't he, against Tottenham?
He did.
It wasn't a perfect performance. Maybe a little bit dodgy on that first one. I don't think it was. I think Saka was largely at fault for the first goal, and Ben White was sort of standing and ball watching. But Raya didn't cover himself in glory, and his distribution looked a little bit.
It was off.
Yeah, but overall, I would say I felt a sort of general calmness from it. You know what I mean?
I wonder if that was down to just nerves, because he obviously know. I mean, all the players that play for Arsenal, whether they're overseas or not, they know the significance of the North London Derby. I'm just wondering whether it just got to him, maybe because. Yeah, distribution-wise, it was. I mean, obviously, he made that great save. Oh my God, that was
incredible. Fantastic. Yeah.
Oh my goodness me, the way he just clawed that out. But you know, it was probably his poorest game, despite that world-class save. You know, he's other than that, he's got 3 out of 4 clean sheets already.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
I did. You know, I didn't expect to see Ramsdale today. Yesterday again. Today for you. Yesterday for me. I didn't expect to see him, so I wasn't surprised. And I think he will be there for Lons, Raya.
Yeah.
I think he'll be there.
I mean, we should. I mean, it feels very much like, no matter what Arteta's saying, his actions are showing who his number one is now.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of the season and what we should be really thankful to have two, because it's not gonna last, is it? It doesn't last at any club. But It would be really kind of naive of fans to be like moaning so hard. I know the media love it, but for fans to be moaning about this sort of conundrum with Raya Ramsdale when we were moaning last season about not having a good backup for him. And it's like, well, what, you can't win, can you?
You can't win.
No, exactly. So you've got to be really enjoying the fact that we've got the ability. We've got that, you know, if we do lose one of them because of you've got that player to come in that's still to a really, really high level. So it's very interesting though, isn't it? It's a very interesting talking point in terms of like the way Arteta is being very, very ruthless in certain areas of the pitch. But that's what he's got to be. If we're going to catch a team like City, we've got to play into the percentages every little bit. And I think this is what he does, really. So, Neil, great podcast. Sorry I kept you so long. James was asleep, and I'll be noting that down.
Did you want to have a quick word about the Liverpool controversies?
Yes,
I'll shut up. Go on.
Well, you've made some good points on it, but I thought, obviously, there's a huge controversy about it, and I think largely Liverpool were quite justified in their frustrations, and I don't want to go over it. There was a lot of decisions they were frustrated with, but the big ones was firstly the red card, which I think there's a lot of different opinion on it. Personally, I feel it's a really reckless tackle. I know he kind of got some of the ball, but if you watch it, his foot is really high at the top of the ball, and there's only one place his foot's going after that. So I think when you slow it down, it looks 10 times worse, and Klopp kind of mentioned that, but I'm like, that's just a reckless tackle. And I don't like when people bring intention into it either. Like there's nothing about the rules, as vague as some of them are, that says intention
rules out a red card. Like, there's not many that go, you meant that, and that's why you're getting it. It's not about that. It's about, you know, was it a dangerous tackle? And this was a dangerous tackle halfway up the shin. So that one, I don't think they've really got a point on. But on the offside one, there's a... Look, it looked like it was onside, and I don't really understand how that happened. Apparently, basically, it was the referees on the field just believing... the VAR believing it would be given or something, and it wasn't, and they couldn't call it back, which is just ridiculous. It shows how sort of just terrible the whole system is, really, which is bad, especially with something so objective like this. It's almost like goal line technology at this point, we were told, and it clearly isn't, because it's not being interpreted correctly. But this, yeah, so I can see on that one. But I feel, not to make it all about Arsenal, but you always look at it from your team's perspective, and I think you discussed this. What I worry about is the absolute uproar from this, from all media outlets in the last 12 hours, has been really, for me, quite shocking, when you feel what some of those terrible VAR offside decisions have occurred. And obviously you always speak about your own club, and I'm not just acting like it's just Arsenal, but we've had two within very recent memory that we just talked about, haven't we, Neil? Everton one, which some people could argue, but that was an intentional block that just led to a perfectly fine goal for us that was called offside. But the worst one is the Brentford one, and I can't believe it got brushed under the carpet so quickly. We were in a title race. In fact, we were top, I believe, at that time, and it was 1-1. We weren't playing great, but it was a goal for them, and they basically didn't give it offside because they forgot that a player even existed in the 6-yard box, and who was like 2 yards offside. And this one for Diaz, in fairness, is... Everyone's like, it's so obvious to the naked eye. It's no way near what the Brentford one was. And the answer we got wasn't that there was a miscommunication between. It was they didn't even see him. And that is way beyond this. And the significance of that moment was way beyond this as well. And my frustration here is I think it's going to get blown to proportion where, you know, the corruption is going to be largely felt, you know, in Liverpool territory. And I find that really difficult to understand, despite the fact they have every right to be very frustrated with that decision. But what's your thoughts on it?
No, I can't add any more to it. The only thing that I would say is how quickly the apology came. Whereas VAR, right, they admitted what they made 2 or 3 errors, and they admitted to for us last season. And yeah. I am going to speak about our club. I'm not going to, I know it's happening to other clubs, but I can only speak about our clubs because... Sorry, that's the way I am. I'm an Arsenal fan. So, and the apology came, but it came maybe a few days afterwards. Liverpool, bang, within minutes, literally. Oh, they've apologised. Oh, what? They've already just examined it very quickly. Oh, God, because it's Liverpool, we have to make the apology now and now. Got to get it out there. You know, we don't want to be under the wrath of Klopp or anyone else at Liverpool. I just think, hang on a minute. Where's the consistency? And then Shearer, the way he goes on about it in Match of the Day. Oh, it's the worst one ever. No, it's not, mate. Open your eyes. There's been a lot worse than that. You know, I think, who had it last season? One of the teams that were fighting relegation, didn't they? And it was an awful decision for them. It's not just about, you know, one club getting the wrath of it. It's happening all over. But it's just funny how some clubs, it's almost as if they've got to go out of their way to be apologetic to them because it happens to be Liverpool, happens to be Man U, happens to be Tottenham maybe. You know, hang on a second, be consistent for all of us, not just the one. It's just how fast that apology came. That was shocking for me. If they're going to do that, they should do it for all of the errors. Yeah. And to be saying, oh, that's the most incredibly horrible or disgusting one of all of them. No, it's not. There's been far worse, mate. Far worse. So that's what I wanted to add to that. But other than that, you said it perfectly, mate. Sorry.
Yeah, and I think Liverpool have had 4 red cards in 7 games, and they might feel unjust on 1 or 2 of those. But imagine if that was Arteta's Arsenal. Imagine we've had 1 red card, which was the worst red card given all season. Neither were red cards. One of them was actually Kai Havertz, and it wasn't really wasting to Tomiyasu, who didn't do anything. The other one was less contact than Jota made on the left back for his first booking, and we didn't get it rescinded. And I think personally, it cost us 2 points because Tomiyasu would have played in that Fulham game and been on by the point that we actually got it. And I think you can't make excuses for dropping 10, you know, 2 points against 10 men at the time, but nothing was made of that. Nothing. We didn't get rescinded, nothing. And again, like I said, I just feel that the ability to just create uproar over decisions that, you know, largely have been, you know, there's so many worse, there's so many more reasons to be aggravated with VAR, and I'm sure other clubs have them too. And I just find it very interesting that this one seems to have been blown into an absolute massive...
And it will continue to decision. Do so in the next few days, yeah. Just wait and see.
Exactly, and I'm not saying VAR, I think it is, it's not fit for purpose in the way it's being run, but that doesn't really give it the right. It was the same in the Invincible era when Mike Riley did what he did to stop our unbeaten run.
That is still, and
people still bring up stuff like, oh, we've never had, I was like, you have to have lived what we lived in that era to understand the discrepancies we were dealing with and what we were fighting against. And, you know, this guy ended up being the head of the PGMOL, and you know, you knew the corruption starts at the top, it filters its ways down, and I think a lot of people that believe that it was just humor and error and stuff like that are starting to believe that there is some proper dodgy stuff going on. But yeah, mate, but in fairness, Liverpool were pretty good in that game with 10 men, and even with 9 men, Tottenham, in my opinion, were pretty average in that game. I think they've been a little bit quite lucky all season, Sheffield United and a few other games. So, but yeah, I mean, in that sense, Liverpool are far bigger danger to the top of the table than I think Liverpool look very strong this season, in fairness, and than Tottenham are. They're a far better team than Tottenham are, and I think Klopp knows that, and that's why he was so frustrated. But again, like you said, like the agenda of Arteta clapping a little bit on the sidelines being the huge uproar, but you know, if a team has 4 red cards in 7 games, it doesn't even get a mention. So I just find that very, very interesting as well, how it's built, you know, around certain coaches and certain things. I think not winning anything big sometimes plays against you as well. You like, if you've won a couple of titles, you know, you get this sort of aura and leniency against you, but it's frustrating. You know, it shouldn't really be that way. You know, it shouldn't really be that way. So yeah, mate, but great weekend so far. Can we have a great midweek and can we have another great weekend? That would be amazing. But Neil, thank you so much. James,
no
from
problem.
Far, thank you for sleeping in, James. Appreciate it. No, but we missed you. We missed you. We'll get you back on the next one. But we are on at Purely Arsenal FP on Twitter. That's at Purely Arsenal FP. You'll see our ats on there if you want to tweet us any questions or anything like that. And just type in Purely Arsenal to YouTube or Spotify or your Apple Podcast app or any other app, and we are pretty much on there. And we try as hard as we can to do one podcast a week. Sometimes we don't succeed, but we will try and try again. Keep the faith. Up the Arsenal. 2 big games to come.